on 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show with Aaron the Power Bauer, the Reggae Warrior, Ross Peltier, the Italian Stallion, or Mini, Elliot Minchella, and Robbie Hunter Paul.
Kia ora and g'day and welcome to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show live here in Pulse 2 Studios. Boys, another week's gone by. How are you feeling?
All good. Good evening.
Good.
Cracking, you guys. Not bad, yeah. Big win over Coventry on the weekend. How did that kick off? How did that go down?
It was good. Got back to winning ways after a tough defeat previous week. So, all good. Looking forward to Warrington now on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a big game, isn't it?
Yeah, I just sat this one out this week, didn't I? Got flogged in training instead.
It's the worst though, isn't
it? Hammered on Sunday.
Isn't
then
it the worst though when you sit out a game?
Oh man!
And then the trainer just thinks I can take him to hell and back.
Yeah, me and Mikey Wood got absolutely hammered on Monday. So.
It's like you'd rather play.
Yeah,
I'd rather play. Get the game fitness because I tell you what, there's nothing you can't replicate a game on training pitch. You can't.
No.
You cannot do it unless you're doing MMA or something like that. But you're never going to go to that extent because you might get injured, won't you?
Yeah.
So you just get flogged. What sort of things did you do?
I was like on watt bike. So we did gym session. It was watt bike at like 2K, 1.5, 1K, 500, 250, then 5K finisher, and then gym as well. So.
And that's awesome for a little bloke like you, eh?
Yeah. My legs are dying, but yeah. It's all good.
For you, Elliot, how did it feel to... end up being the sort of like the opener for the Women's Super League?
It was good. I really enjoyed the day. I only got 20 minutes, so I had a nice relaxing day.
And you didn't have to do extras?
No extras, just 20 minutes, get in and see you later. No, I stayed around, watched the women's game, really good for the sport. Obviously, they went down to Leeds. But it was a really good game, a bit fiery as well. There was some bit of biff between the women. I like to see that.
It was building though. They were talking about. I was talking to Adam Cuthbertson earlier on in the week, and he was talking about how because four of the Bradford women's team have gone to the Leeds team, that there was quite a bit of spite going on. There was some stuff going underneath the radar.
Yeah, there was some like facials in the tackle, and then there was a bit of pushing and shoving as well at one point, which made it a bit interesting. But no, it was good, really. My first game watching a women's rugby league game, so no, I enjoyed it. And
Nearly 4,000 people turned out as well.
Yeah, no, it was good. Good crowd, and a lot of them obviously stay behind to watch the women's game as well. So, no, it's healthy for the club.
What about you? What were your thoughts on the launch of the Women's Super League, which a lot of games played this weekend?
Yeah, obviously it was a smaller version of it last year, wasn't it? But this is sort of the first year it's taken off.
It's got some of the bigger brands, the rugby league brands involved.
Leeds and Wigan
St. Helens
have come in,
Leeds.
And Cass as well, yeah. Bradford did a really good job, so did Leeds, of selling it, and obviously a bold decision putting it on second on the double header. I don't think anyone would have really complained if it had been the curtain raiser. You know, it was just to be sharing the stage with the men was a good sign of where we are. But seeing the highlights myself, yeah, it's right. Bit of biff, bit of fire between the two teams, like a bit of that. But it all bodes well, doesn't it? You know, more hopefully do it more often in the future, and in the summer there'll be more chances do that.
There was some brilliant skill on display also, and for me it's all building towards 2021. The England women's team went down under this year, and they, to be honest, they learn a real lesson. Mm-hmm. The Australian team and the New Zealand team, both of them have been together for a long time, and they've been playing a lot of high intensity internationals. You know, during the Auckland Nines, they would have three Nines game throughout a three-game series throughout the weekend as well. So a lot of international rugby being played between those two nations, and they've launched the inaugural NRL women's competition down there as well, haven't they? Also, which is great. I mean, there's quite a few two of the NRL teams actually got knocked back, because I think it's a six-team competition down there, but quite a few of them got knocked back, and they're really up in arms about it, which gives a little bit more colour. But it also, you know, it also builds towards what will hopefully be more young women getting involved in the playing side of the game, which would be fantastic. We're missing out, if you think about it, we're missing out on a whole 50% of a marketplace. And it's something that, we as a sport, we've got to get involved with. You mentioned it before, though, Ross, big game against Warrington. How are the boys feeling about that?
Yeah, boys are good, you know. We've had a few knocks and stuff, so I reckon Minnie's going to be playing at halfback. But yeah, it's a good feeling at camp. You know, everyone's just excited to play a Super League team, innit? So there's no expectations on us. We can
Super
just go
League
out
team
there.
And for an informed Super League team as well.
Very informed. They've started to find form now because they were struggling early on in the year, but. Yeah, boys can't wait to dig in. Everyone's trying to bash each other in training, trying to get a shirt.
Yeah. Well, they're sitting in a third place at the moment on 16 points. Mm. There's only St. Helens above them on 18, equal points with Wigan as well. So, you know, more than turn their season around, they really are putting up some of the best performances, aren't they? Does it give you a little bit of nerves, any worry, just a little bit of fear, or is it just purely and simply, you know what, pressure's on them, they've got to perform, we can just go out there and enjoy ourselves?
Yeah, it's just literally no pressure. You know, we can go out, enjoy yourself. No one's expecting us to win Challenge Cup. You know, as main focus is on the league. So, you know, just a good day out for fans, good day out for the game. Hopefully we can, you know, keep it a good score and, you know, express yourself, really.
One of the things that I personally, I can't make the game this week is my son's birthday, so I'm going across to the coast with him. But one of the things I'm a bit disappointed with is that Warrington haven't allowed the club to live stream it. What are your thoughts on that?
It's one of them, but it's him working it again. Obviously, you know, I did the commentary on the commentary game. You know, I could watch the Facebook Live as I was commentating on the game, and the amount of Bradford fans from all over, like
the
England,
world.
The world, people in Greece, people in Australia, rugby league fans in general were tuning in. Like, there were rugby league fans. I know a lot of the players in Jamaica, the NRL, the price has gone too high from 2.4 to watch NRL. So they've all been excited, and they watch a lot of Bradford games in Jamaica because it's one of the only rugby league they get to watch.
I remember seeing a quote from a Jamaican rugby league saying disappointed that they haven't been given the opportunity to watch it.
Yeah, because it's a big thing. Watching rugby league just to them boys is a massive thing. So it's free rugby league, so they tune in and watch it. And it's disappointing because it's a bigger picture. It's not really about people aren't going to go to the game because they're going to watch it on Facebook, because then people had already got a game. So.
Well, that's right. And this is the thing, this was the thing that I wanted us to discuss, was to see whether or not you guys thought, you know, the fact that it's going to be put, and I think this is the best argument that most clubs can put, is that if it's going to be streamed live somewhere, then people will not come to the game. But for me, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think people that attend live sports attend it for a specific type of reasons. We've got a poll running on the Pulse 2. Is it the Twitter page on Pulse 2? So at Pulse 2?
Pulse 2, yeah. Pulse 2 MDL.
At Pulse 2 MDL. So if you want to just go on and put your add your vote to it, if you're listening at home, or if you've got your smartphone in your hand and you've got a Twitter account, at this point in time, 60% of the audience that have voted are saying they go to the game to support the team, or they say they go to the game. The question that we asked was, if the game was being live streamed on social media, would that stop you from going to a game? And 60% at this point in time saying no. I think it's something like another 36% are saying, depending upon where they're playing or depending upon different types of circumstances, and 4% are saying definitely, yeah, I would stay at home and watch the game. So that's sort of alluding to that fact that actually people that go to watch live sport go for a specific type of reason, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, my main point was, since Bradford started streaming, our home game attendance has dipped.
No, they've increased. So if you compare them against 2017, you've got a bigger following
fans
now turning out to the game.
And we live stream it, so that's what I'd say. We're not losing fans really with it. So,
and this is the thing that I am that I understand, is that when you're being exposed to live sport, let's say that you are a Bulls fan, let's say that you've gone away from the sport for whatever reason over the last couple of years, and yet you're able to access it, and it starts to remind you, it tweaks those emotive things inside you to actually get down and start watching the game as well. And equally, if you're brand new to the sport, isn't it a great way of stopping this from being our dirty little secret?
Yeah, look, I don't disagree with what you're saying. First of all, I think Bradford have handled it much better this week than they did last week. The statement last week was obviously all kinds of wrong for all kinds of reasons, but this week they've
gone... In your opinion?
Yeah,
in
my opinion, of course. But they've gone about it in a much better way this week, in my opinion. You're right in that this is an exciting thing for the sport that's happening. I mean, you see, I think Sunday, York are playing Catalans, and it'll be streamed on the BBC website. I always had a sneaky feeling. I mean, it sounds like it's Warrington's decision. I always thought it'd be slightly more difficult to get these Challenge Cup games on because the Challenge Cup's sort of a bit of a different beast, isn't it, to regular out-and-out league competition. But we're heading down an exciting avenue by where people from all over the world can watch sport for nothing now. I'm sure this
will... I've been privy to some of the analytics that...
the numbers are great.
The numbers are great, but equally, where people are watching from, they're watching from down under. There's quite a big audience actually coming from the America as well, from the United States. And that is exactly what we want. We want to push our sport, our code, into those environments, don't we?
Yeah, also I think you've got to look at it financially. You know, for example, a family of four and they've got two kids, they might not be able to afford to go to the Warrington game. They might have wanted to, you know, sit and watch it at home. And, you know, for example, those kids are missing out on watching our game, which I think it's a bit poor, really.
And for me, it just seems, yes, you know, there's that 4%, like we're talking about. There is that 4% who say, no, if it's streamed live into my handset, you know, I'm going to stay home and I'm going to watch it. But it's negligible to what I believe is the actual benefit. The benefit is saturating it and giving people the opportunity to be re-engaged with the sport. Now, Bradford, the Bradford audience, for example, had one of the, and still does have one of the biggest audience, and I know this because there is a huge Bradford following that sign up to the one of the most significant followings that signed up to the our rugby league app. So that's normally an indicator of what the size of your marketplace is. So people that identify Bradford as their club. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about that is that people that consume sport consume it for their own personal reasons. So I think it's just a little bit short-sighted. I think there's a bigger game at play here, and that's why I'm trying to push the sport to as many avenues as possible. Okay, we're going to take a break, but before we do that, we're going to have a look at the road, so stick with us.
It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show, live in the studio with Ross, the reggae warrior, Peltier, Elliot, the Italian stallion, Minchella, and the power that is Aaron Bauer. Boys, I want to talk about culture creation within a squad and the success and all of that stuff that goes around it, because I entered into an interesting conversation with a Salford fan last Friday, and I was saying to them, look, the strength within the squad, they're nervous because obviously they're sitting in the bottom four, and they're nervous about their position, and they're worried. And I said, actually, the talent within the squad, you'll be fine. Where it's important is the mindset of that group altogether once you get into that four. Because I remember talking to the guys out at the Million Pound Game last year, both Lee and Catalan, and for me, both sets of players, I came back and I said to Nobby, who I was doing the work with, and Tanya Arnold, and I said, this game could go either way because there's no belief in either of them. Do you know what I mean? So culture creation, what does it take to keep your mindset in the right place to be successful? Or, you know, does culture breed success, or does success breed the culture?
I think from my experience of last year and this year at Bradford, I think the culture,
which is a great example,
and the ethos that John Key has brought in has been a massive difference on how I felt at training, how everyone who was there from last year has felt. Because last year, you know, Jeff Toovey came over, he didn't really understand championship level, didn't understand, like, he didn't understand why we all wasn't superstars, why we couldn't do,
and he couldn't understand why there wasn't a big yellow ball in the sky all the time.
Yeah. And you know, we started off all right, and then we got into a roll of some losses, and you know, everything at the club were just going a bit, it felt down, you know, everyone felt like, oh, we're minus 12. You know, they want that emphasis. Everything were a bit loose. You know, everyone, not much rules in place. People doing what they want. People missing days. People listening. But then John Key is coming now, and he's created a whole different mindset. You know, that discipline. He's instilled discipline into us. And he's just the actual culture. It's hard to put a finger on what the culture is, but he's just changed the whole mindset.
But we've all got to agree. It doesn't matter what line of work we're in. Discipline is a huge part of it. Don't you agree? Mm.
Yeah, he's especially in rugby league as well.
Yeah, I think.
Well, Minnie, you've been to a number of different clubs. What have been the comparison to where you've been as to where you are right now?
It's obviously, I've been a part of a few different groups, and it's not just about the coaches or whoever. It's about the group of players, like, you know, who you're involved in. If you're good blokes or not, you get a lot of disruptions along the way. But if majority of the time, if you've got a good group of players, good blokes off the field as well, good leaders who lead the young players to the right direction, and everybody's on the same page, then you get a successful team. If you get two or three players or even more, you know, going against what everybody else is doing, that's when you don't get a successful team on the field. It starts to show, because you're not a team, you're not a good club. And for me, yeah, it's the culture breeds a success massively. For me, it's got to be instilled in you.
So you're saying culture's got to be first.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And that starts at the top. First and foremost, I'm guessing it starts at the top, and then it filters down into... But how far do we say at the top is? Do you know what I mean? Is it the head coach? Is he the be-all and end-all? Can it not be people above that, i.e. board of directors, chairman? Can they not have an impact on it as well? Have you heard of those type of stories where... that has had a negative, positive impact on what's going on?
Me personally, when I was at Keighley, you know, with Paul March, you know, he brought a lot of us in. And then in his last year, he started to have that disagreement between, you know, the people upstairs and between what he was doing. They didn't believe in what he was doing. They didn't believe in the squad that he was trying to build and the direction he was trying to take us in. And that were very troubling, you know. We had, like, directors coming to training and try to talk to us, and then he would try to talk to us. And then people falling out with it.
How does that make you feel? How does that make you feel as a player when a director comes and speaks to you? And obviously, he's speaking to you without the knowledge of the head coach. Yeah. Or they may be doing it with the direct sort of having that influence to the head coach. I'm going to speak to this guy without you. I don't even need you. You know what I mean? How does that make you feel?
Yeah, myself, it got the teams back up a bit, because, you know, we had people like Paul White, who played at Huddersfield and stuff, and Paul March brought them there, and they felt it were kind of a stabbing him in the back, trying to get the manager out of the way, you know, and them trying to text. So people were loyal to the manager more than the owners, and then it were upsetting the balance and everything. So yeah, that culture kind of turned a bit bad when, you know, upstairs tried to come into the playing department bit, and you hear stories like that about Catalan and stuff like that. So
Yeah. Point to you, Aaron. What's the latest sort of hum going underneath the radar in regards to Catalans? Because they just haven't been getting the results, have they? I mean, I know Ben Agosh has come out over the last, saying that he believes that the team has turned the corner over the last three games with a couple of late losses, but still, the game against Castleford on the weekend didn't turn out too right for them, did it?
Catalans and Huddersfield look very similar to me, not just in terms of where they are on the field, but as long as things stay the way they are at that club, things will never change. You could bring in any coach you want. If he's not given the ability to change things and to do things a certain way, there's talk already of a new man coming into Huddersfield, a guy called Simon Wolford. Guys in Australia have been saying he's the assistant coach of the Knights. Until he needs to be able to sign his own players, he needs to be able to let the players go he doesn't think are right, but he's walking into an environment where Huddersfield have just renewed a load of players that he might not want.
Well, here's another throw then. Is an Australian the right person for that role? And the reason why I'm going to toss this in there is because, you know, briefly what we were just talking about with Jeff Tuvey, coming over like a fish out of water into this environment, it's a different game over here.
Yeah, it is.
Is it the talent that Huddersfield have within their ranks from their 1 to 24 is pretty high quality? Is it not just a matter of getting a Darryl Powell-esque type of person out there that's a hard nose and just needs to straighten it up? Or can Chris and the team that are there at this point in time do it for them?
I like Chris. I'm surprised.
He's a smart guy.
I would think the smart money or the smart bet would have been to give Chris the rest of the year, or at least probably until through somewhere like Magic Weekend, to see what he can do with them. Yeah. Got a lot of injuries at the minute. Two of their best players, McGilvery and Cudjoe, haven't even touched the ball while Foreman's been coach. Danny Brough suspended again. Marmo's injured. They've got a lot of talent sat on the sidelines, and it's sort of directly comparable to Catalan as well, with the culture thing that McNamara's looked from the outside looking in. He's making a very clear effort to try and change the culture there. He's brought McAlorum in. I believe he's done some very good things on a day-to-day basis with Catalans. They're going to sign Sam Tompkins, all the noises suggest. So McNamara if you're guessing, he sounds like he's putting a bit of an English stamp on that place now to try and bring them forward a little bit and bring them in line with the rest of Super League. So the culture is massive, and it starts right at the top, you know, from the owner. And everyone's got a responsibility, haven't they, right through to the kit men and the physio, because culture's spoken about by so many people in rugby league these days. You can't go a week without going into a press conference and hearing a coach talk about the culture's great. I think with Bradford, John Keir's obviously done that, but they've got some leaders as well, and not just some leaders like, you know, Ashley Gibson, Lee Smith, but they've got people like Ross and like Ethan Ryan, who were there through tough times last year and stood by the club. So they'll have they've got a lot of good things going on, and it's not just about one thing that makes a good club. It's about four or five different cultures combining to make one strong one. Bradford look like they've got it at the minute. Some Super League clubs, you can see it a mile off. You know, your Castleford, your St Helens, they look like happy places to be. Others, we touched on Catalans, not so much.
Mm. And I think the word happy is an interesting word that you use then.
Well, you want to go to work and enjoy it, don't you?
That's right.
Yeah.
And people that are turning up to do a job as opposed to enjoy their job or invest, or more importantly, be their job. Does that make sense?
But
to be?
Work isn't, for these lads, work isn't just turning up on a Sunday and playing for 80 minutes and going home, is it? Work is, and if you're full-time, work is 5 days a week before that, getting ready to play. It's about bonding with your teammates. It's about being happy with who you're with, happy who your boss is. It's so comparable to modern day life that people probably miss the point sometimes, that if you don't like working for your boss, you're not going to like going to work. You know, if you're working in accountants or you work on a rugby, you know, at a rugby club, it's exactly the same. And I think people sometimes forget that rugby's about more than just the 80 minutes, isn't it? It's about everything you do in and around that, leading up to that game every week.
Nice. So on that, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have a look around the sport and see all the hottest topics, and we'll be discussing them. So stick with us right here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2. On 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live in the studio with Aaron Bauer, Ross Peltier and Elliot Minchella. So boys, in this segment, we want to have a look around the sport and see some of the hottest talking points. First one I wanted to talk about is that there's been a suggestion to bring in the golden point into the games over here. What are your thoughts? What are your personal feelings on that? Golden point to so there'll never be a drawn game.
Rubbish.
Nah, do it.
So that's interesting. I actually, just in that one thing, I find that interesting. What do you think about it, Ross?
What's the situation for subs if you got a golden point?
Splitting.
Do you have an interchange? Because I don't know about playing that extra. Because if I'm left on that end, I've got a golden point.
Nah,
I don't know.
Going.
It could keep make it interesting.
No,
yeah.
Don't say I don't know. Pick a side.
I reckon it'd make it interesting.
So
yeah.
you want to go to one?
Yeah, yeah.
So interesting. Players say go for it.
Scummy press say no.
What? Why?
The media says no.
I don't have an issue with a draw.
Media
in sport.
Supporter.
Oh. What's wrong with two closely matched sides being closely matched after a full game?
Fight it out, boys. Let's see.
You play to win.
Yeah, I get that. But sometimes you can't play to win, can you? You can't win every week.
You can if there's golden point.
Well, they could lose on golden point.
No, do you not agree, Ross? That I'd be very disappointed coming off drawing when there's an opportunity to win. I'm all for it. I think it's exciting. You watch it in the NRL, and how many times you've seen it, even this season, there's only been seven games or six games.
It finished the NRL Grand Final 2 years ago.
It gets everybody off the seat, and it's nail-biting, isn't it? It's a massive yes for me.
You know, the worst thing about it, though, is as rugby players go, we're hopeless at drop kicks.
Oh, yeah. Gareth O'Brien, isn't it?
Yeah, Gareth O'Brien. Sneed's not bad at it.
Well, actually, the drama that was created
there.
That's
the best advert for it, isn't it? Yeah. That Salford OKR game. But there had to be a winner that day.
There had to be a winner.
They couldn't just shake hands and both be in Super League, unfortunately. I think draws are fine, you know.
Is that the traditionalists in you?
Probably, yeah. Brought up on football as well, where draws are part and parcel of it, maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's only my personal belief. I get where these guys are coming from, that you don't want to come off a field thinking, if we'd have had another 5 minutes, we could have won that game. Because you're disappointed at you if you don't win.
Have you guys ever been in a draw where you've thought to yourself, oh my gosh, we were lucky to hold on for a draw there? Or you thought, has it always been, we lost points there. We lost the opportunity to win them.
I don't think I've ever been in a draw. They're rare in England over here. They're quite rare draws. Do we have we had a draw yet?
Yeah, we have.
Every time, every game I ever played in, ever, there was a draw, I always felt I lost.
Yeah, I'd feel like
I always felt I lost the game.
Depends, though. Depends if you've like hung on and got a last minute try for a draw, then you might feel like you've saved someone. But
yeah. And that's never happened. I think all the games that I ever played in where we did draw, we didn't come from behind. Yeah. It was the opposition we were playing. It was sort of like we couldn't just hold them out. I mean, one of the greatest finals I've ever played in was in the championship. It was in Salford. Salford playing the Crusaders. The following year, both the Crusaders and Salford came back into the Super League. I think it was a 12-team Super League. Then it went to a 14-team Super League. So they were straight up. But Salford had to come from behind. Our Salford team had to come from behind, and we just scraped in with a draw on the 80th minute with a goal kick. But at that point, because we were coming from behind, we were dominating. If that made sense, so we went straight into the playoffs, and we just blew. Well, it was 10 minutes each way. It wasn't a golden point situation. But so your thoughts are on it? No, definitely not for you.
I took it. Yeah, I took it. It make extra time if it's short, wouldn't it? If a game ever went to it, but yeah, I'd take it.
I like it on those rare occasions, like in cup ties and finals, where you get to see it. I think it's quite a novelty.
You've talked Aaron around, boys.
Yeah, no, you haven't. No. I'd still would not have it. Only in obviously cup ties where there can't be a draw. No, not for me. Not for you. A draw.
Well, actually, the greatest cup, the greatest Challenge Cup final of all time was happened because of a draw. The 1954 Challenge Cup final between Halifax and Warrington. 102,000 people turned up to Oddsall Stadium. They suggested 120,000 because the floodgates had to be open to let a bit of a press going on.
Did you get up early to watch it?
What happens if there's no point in golden point? What happens then?
You just
then
keep playing until someone dies.
No, but in a final, what would
playing.
You do?
And you keep playing, I think.
Just keep going.
Like you got like penalty shootout.
But that has happened. That has happened before. There was a penalty shoot, goal kick.
Yeah, I recall that once.
And it was just, I just thought, what a nonsense way to determine the outcome of a game.
They may step up for a conversion.
Oh, wow. No chance.
So when everyone gets chosen yeah. in a line, where would you be in that list in Bradford? 1 to 17. What position would you take?
Depends where it's from. I'd say about 10.
So it's got to be 10. I don't know, from halfway.
I don't know. Like, ever since I remember when I seen Paul Anderson slot one, I used to think I wanted to kick when I was a kid after that.
On his final ever game.
Yeah. I always thought, I could kick if he could kick that. Didn't work.
I'm sure he did a toe poke as well, a torpedo.
Yeah.
And stepped up. Well, I think the jury's out. I think you guys would engage with it. Personally, no. I'm with Aaron.
Good man.
I am 100% with Aaron. I'm just sort of like, nah. I wouldn't want the game to be determined by a drop kick. I do understand the drama and the excitement built around it, but I just don't think it's a good enough skill to determine the outcome of a game.
We'll be saying this next week when Bradford have beaten Warrington on Golden Point to progress.
Peltier drop goal.
You know, that is something I would probably do. I wouldn't put it past myself.
You know, one of the things that gets me about front rowers, and this happens so often. So, you know, when a front rower, it's the fifth tackle, and a front rower gets thrown the ball by accident. Why do front rowers kick it? Why?
Well, in that defence, have you ever seen Jamie Thackeray against Catalan Dragons away? That exact situation happened. He got thrown the ball on the last... And he caught the ball, chipped it over the line, it bounced, kicked it with his right, it bounced, he kicked it then with his left foot over Clint Greenshields, caught the ball and went underneath the sticks. That's the best front
There's
row try I've ever seen.
Always going to be an exception to the rule. Jamie Thackeray's a
that,
kicker.
If you haven't seen that, no, he's a prop forward.
Yeah.
He is a donkey, but he's a kicker as well.
I remember when I signed for Bradford from Keighley, though, I started training like while I was still at Keighley, you know, trying to integrate me in, so I come watch games. And I remember that Dewsbury game where the Bulls were winning by like 1 point, and they kicked it. Adam Sidlow tried to chip off a kickoff return, and he gave him a penalty, and they kicked the two from that penalty. Yeah, I figured, mate. Yeah.
Don't do it. But you see it all the time.
I've done it myself.
They know that it's the last play.
Yeah.
You know that this is the one opportunity in a game where you can get away and no one's really going to yell at you. But for me, it's sort of like even when there's loads of time around them, they kick it rather than just go, you know, where's my halfback? Yeah. Where's someone who's more likely to get a proper kick in?
I remember when I first signed full time at Huddersfield, we were playing curtain raiser at OKR. And I've made a break from halfway line. These are my days when I play back row, then I want this big.
Started off as a centre, didn't he?
You
can just imagine this story. Yeah, it started off as from the halfway line. Then he went, I made a break from our 20 metre.
Nah.
And then he goes, I picked the ball up in my own end.
It got longer
and longer as the night went on.
I got one-on-one with fullback. I've decided to try to chip him, and it's ended up going dead.
Yes.
Nathan Brown, watching, he's pulled me off and took me to change rooms and said,
blast,
don't
give
you
me a
ever, ever kick a ball out.
Do you remember this year? When it was a big show and go.
Yeah.
When you were having a scrap on the sideline and he went down that edge, the first thought that came into his head, I can chip kick him.
I was on his inside.
That's right.
Don't give it me in pressure.
All right, we're going to go to a break. But first up, let's have a look at the roads.
On 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show and the final segment of the show. We're live in the studio with Aaron Bauer, Ross Peltier and Elliot Minchella. In this segment, we're going to have a look at some of the top upcoming games this weekend. But just before we look at the games moving forward, just a review. Ross, your boys, Wakey, they got back on top again against St. Helens.
Yeah.
Massive win for them, mate.
It were coming, wasn't it? They were always, 2 points or a try off at past few weeks. They've been unlucky, but... Yeah, I mean, Bill Tupou as well, he scored a good try. I mean, I was impressed with him. He dropped a few, didn't he, and said, like, no one's away from getting chopped. So it was a big response from him.
Man, Bill Tupou, he looks strong.
He looked quality, didn't he?
What was the other big game of the round? Actually, I watched your comment, Aaron, and it was the Leeds versus Wigan game.
Yeah. Put that on it.
Thankfully, the last 10 minutes sort of made up, well, not made up for it, but at least made you forget.
Basically,
how bad the first
seven
it was
an extremely flat game.
Leeds,
are we looking, is this another example of the Easter period, the two games over Easter?
No.
We always talk about the next game and the two games after.
Because I went to Wakefield St. Helens on Sunday and it was a fantastic game and they played the same amount of games over Easter. No.
Maybe they were soft over Easter. They just
nothing
had
to do
a
mess
about
Easter.
So what is it then? What can it be that happens on that stage against two of the biggest teams in the competition?
Whether it's completely the reason for it, I don't know. But a couple of the players I spoke to after the game, one of them was Bateman, said that once it drizzles a little bit, those balls are a nightmare to deal with, apparently.
Yeah.
Wigan had first-hand experience of going to Australia and playing with the Steedens only 2 months ago, which is supposed to be really good grip and everything. But those Rhino balls, players and coaches, we've got to listen to him.
Yeah, but just on that, isn't it weird, don't you think? Because you find that you start a game, and in the 5-10 minutes into the game, when you get a little bit of drizzle like that, the ball becomes like a bar of soap. Mm. But by about the 35th minute, it's not as slippery. Do you notice that?
Yeah. I know what you mean, but these Rhino balls, for me, they're just... It is like a bar of soap. Once there's a bit of rain, it's so greasy.
That's what it feels like. Yeah, what are they like in the dry?
They're not too bad, but it's just when it rains, they just go right greasy. It's like they've got washing up liquid on. That's how I can describe it.
Yeah, I know.
It's not.
There's like there's a film on them.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
they're a bit thinner as well than stadium balls were. A bit narrower. But I know when we spoke with Gaz Carvel and Players Union that there is clubs and teams are talking what the union can do about the situation with the ball. I know they've signed a deal with Ryan. I don't know what that deal is, but you ask any player in any club what ball you'd want to play with and they say bring back the stadium. So
you're complaining about the ball. prima donna players, you know what I mean?
Listen to I remember players. When you were playing with eight panelers, man, at Gilbert.
Eight panel football.
They were amazing.
They were some right balls, eh?
Ladies, you know, someone came up with a great idea. to most rugby balls are made out of four panels. Well, someone thought it'd be a great idea to make an eight-panel ball because they cut, and I understand the science behind it. It cuts the air better, but we don't kick the ball in a spiral. We kick it end over end. So it was actually made for the wrong code because in rugby union they do kick it like that.
Gilbert's had some good balls. I enjoyed playing with them.
Beach balls as well. They were so round.
They were footies, aren't they?
They were hard to hold.
Hopefully we won't have any more talk about the ball because because like the weather's obviously turning now, isn't it? Yeah. So it shouldn't really be anything this weekend with a bit of luck. Mm. But if Bradford lose, ball.
Yeah, blame the ball.
Definitely the ball.
Definitely the ball. And being that you're probably going to play in the halves.
For my missed tackles, it was definitely the ball.
Why'd you miss that tackle? Wow, the ball was slippery.
That line.
How does that work as an excuse?
That was me against working with JK. Oh, blowing my legs off. Why'd you drop it in the last 5? See, these balls, mate, in contact. Yeah. Just
did you really? Did you really?
Nah, I didn't.
Oh, you missed the opportunity. JK, everyone's talking about that. The balls are horrible. Okay, let's look at some of the pick of the round this coming weekend. Hull FC versus Leeds, maybe the second top game next to the following night and on Friday night, Wigan versus Castleford. But let's just have a look at Hull FC versus Leeds. Hull FC at home.
Yeah, Leeds obviously coming off the back of a loss. They generally bounce back pretty well. I think they've shown that they can cope without Maguire and Burrow this year pretty well. Milo looks like he's slowly settling in.
I like what Milo's doing.
Yeah,
at the
I like Milo. Hull's a tough place to go, though. They're quietly going about the business. They did stutter a little bit, but they had a good Easter, a good win at Widnes last week, and they've had a full week between games. So, and I think they've got Manu, Minicello and Hadley back, so they've got some big size back in that pack. So I'd probably back Hull. But it's a real flip of a coin game. And to be honest, you look at the top four, I think these two are fifth and sixth, if memory serves me correct. Yeah, they are. So it's a big game in the race for the four because suddenly whoever loses, it could start to get away from them a little bit.
What do you guys thought? LFC, Leeds, Rhinos?
I'm going to go Hull. It's, like Aaron said, it's a bit of a flip of a coin game. Both teams are they're doing all right. Obviously, Leeds lost, but Hull had a good win at Widnes and Dev probably had the extra day recovery. I'm going to go Hull just because of that. They're on a bit of form and I think they'll keep it going.
Yeah, it'd be a difficult one, you know. Hull are playing well. Josh Griffin's having a good few games.
Is he English standard?
Yeah, I reckon he'd be better than playing John Bateman at centre. No offence to Bateman. Bateman's a quality back rower, but I think Josh Griffin would be a lot better at centre.
I like what he's doing at the moment. I'm with
big
you.
And strong, isn't he? For me,
he is international. He's at that cusp now where he's got to be drafted into that squad, put around those players so his expectations of himself raises. Mm.
I think Percival's probably just in front of him. Yeah, like Percival, but they're the two, aren't they?
But they need to be in that. They need to be in that group.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they're like Percival, won't even play in it. World
we
Cup.
Haven't had a big centre since Keith Senior, probably. You know, we've got the silky skills of Watkins out on that right flank, but you've not had a big, sizeable centre since Keith Senior retired.
Makinson could be an option in that regard, though. It's a bit of a wild card. I know he plays predominantly wing, but he has played centre. He's a big player. He carries the ball.
I'm a big fan of Makinson. Yeah. He's just busy at the moment. He's got some hustle about him.
The key thing is we've got some options, and they're all better than playing Bateman. It's out of position. Take Bateman out of the back row's weaker. Mm-hmm. So play Bateman where he belongs.
Well, even if you bring Bateman off the bench, he adds a lot of energy. Again, he's another player with a lot of hustle, isn't he?
He could even play 13 when O'Loughlin's time's up. I think that's why Wigan looked at him initially as that long-term option at 13. So he's an option there.
He's great. I'm actually backing Leeds on this. I think Brian McDermott's comments after the game about it being Leeds basically playing with their own heads up their own backsides and just they're coming up with some dumb plays. I think they'll be motivated to try and definitely play better than they played last Friday night. So I'm going to back Leeds on this one, but I think I'm the only one on that. Forward to Friday night, Wigan versus Castleford. This should be tasty. Wigan at home to Cass.
I can see Wigan winning it. I don't think Casa are playing the same level they were playing last season. You know, they had a good win against Catalan. But
is it me, or does it feel like they're still tinkering with the spine of their team, with the master plan to come together, and they haven't quite got that worked out yet?
Yeah, well, Jake Truman, you know, he's a young lad. You know, it's his first ever year Super League, so he's adjusting, and I think they're adjusting to all without Zach Hardacre.
Truman's going really well at fullback. He's been a great pick up from obviously the mess that happened at Bradford. But I think he's only 18, 19. So realistically, is he going to play fullback every week? Probably not. So then you're faced with putting Ben Roberts back in now, with him being back at standoff now. So you're right, they are still tinkering. They're still trying to find out what the best team is, which is probably a byproduct of why they're not playing as well as last year. But I think if they win the games in hand, they go joint top of the league, Cass. They're the only team left that have played nine. And I actually back them at Wigan on Friday. Wigan have massively improved this year, and the Wigan of last year would have definitely lost that game at Leeds on Friday. They had Sam Tompkins to thank for it, by the way. So they're running out of games, by the sounds of it, to be grateful for him being in their side, because it sounds like he's going to France. But I think Castleford have just got a little bit more edge about them in those big games over the last year or so, the last year, 18 months. They certainly look like they're more accustomed to dealing with it. So I back Castleford, but again, two great games on Sky, by the way. Two real flip of a coin games.
So why are you so certain that Sam's going to end up in the south of France?
Because I've been told that he is.
By a source that you're not going to obviously disclose.
No.
But you're very, very confident.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you are. We call you the power, because you've got your finger on the button, you know what I mean?
Well, the Catalan's owners made some public comments this week as well about Sam, he said in the French paper, L'Independent, I think it was, Sam wants to come here, his family wants to come here. So, not all the right noises.
I want to go there. I'm going to take my family there. Living in the sun, 9 months of the.
Don't think you're quite on their hit list for Sam, a 4-year deal. I think I'd go for Tompkins.
Wow. Okay, let's have a look at a couple of the cup games. Yeah. Bulls taking on Warrington, which is, for me, actually, the pick of the round. But Featherstone versus Doncaster. Doncaster flying at this point in time in League One. It's a great opportunity for them to
get another upset.
I hope Featherstone put 50 on them, 60 on them. So then, so they're down for next
bust
week.
Them up.
Featherstone, 80-0.
Yeah, hopefully Fev put a number on them.
So Doncaster will be thinking the same thing, won't they?
Doncaster could win that game, but Feather going very well.
Okay,
very well.
Just a quick one. We're nearly out of time. Lee Centurions versus London.
Lee.
Yeah, London for me. So turned a corner.
Mini saying London. Yeah. Aaron saying London, but
Lee, Ryan Bailey, hat trick. I reckon Lee will win though.
All right, thank you very much for wherever you are listening this evening. Thank you to the boys being on the show. We'll be back this time next Wednesday. We love you.
Listen back to today's show and all previous Robbie Hunter Paul shows at pulse2.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.